This is Osen Cocktail.
Hi, I'm Kirby Plessis. I have 20 years experience in intelligence analysis and OSINT, and I'm the founder of Plessis.net. You can find me online on Twitter as Kerbster.
And I'm Cynthia Navarro, and I've been a private investigator since 1979 and went into using OSINT for my investigations in 1997. You can find me on Twitter at Finnegan's Way.
Welcome back to OSINT Curious. Cynthia, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Excited to be here.
Yeah, nice to have to get back and have another episode. Today with Cynthia and I, we have Sarah Womer, who has now taken over production of the podcast. Welcome, Sarah.
Hello.
And our guest of the day is Skip. And Skip, I'm going to massacre your last name, but Skipperst?
Good, not bad. You did well. Skiphorst. You're good.
Okay. So, Skip, why don't you tell a little bit about yourself before we start talking about tools?
Yeah, sure. Excellent. Hey, thanks so much for having invited me on the podcast. It's an honor to be listening to the other podcast you ran. And it's just amazing, even after I've not been in for so long for OSINT, but you can always learn from other professionals in the industry. It just never stops. It just never stops, right? I think there's good power in this podcast. So a bit about me and how I got into OSINT, I guess. I think I'll leave my childhood behind me. I don't have a typical route into OSINT. I'm actually quite glad I didn't. I spent a long time doing things that had nothing to do with computers or the internet. I think the first time I got involved with the internet was in 1997 on my dad's computer in Switzerland. And he said, "Hey, look at this thing. I've got a cable. And if I put this cable in the computer, there's going to be like a phone sound, you can start consuming information." And I thought, this is great. So ICQ, Alta Vista, what else came after that? Help me out a bit. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I got it. There we go. Is it still a thing, by the way?
No.
That internet thing?
No, it's not.
It was bad.
Okay. So that, Napster and all the other ones. And then, that spent quite a few years, 10 plus years or 15 years. I'm bad at numbers in the military. Doing things that had nothing to do with computers, so lots of stuff outside. And then started studying at university, Chinese. So I've always had a knack for languages. I grew up with a French speaker. My mother tongue is French. In the military, I thought, it might be a good idea to, between trainings and deployments, to continue with languages. So I self-taught myself Arabic. That was pretty useful. So I was able to use that a lot in the Middle East, really immersion and a learning curve. And then I hit a speed bump at work, which put me out of military service. So I thought I'd continue learning a language. And I chose Chinese. I thought it might be interesting to do that at my own pace. And then went to university as a crusty old dude, surrounded by very young, fast brains around me at university in the Netherlands. And I studied China studies, which is a study that encompasses everything about the language of China, the politics, history, classical Chinese. Got an awesome minor in Chinese music. It's the only course I got a really high, sky high grade for. The rest were passable. I was happy with passable. Anyway, and it's actually during my studies at university. So I spent some time in China, spent some time in Taiwan studying. Very happy I did both. It's good to have that perspective. But it's actually during those studies that I kind of found out that I was probably doing things wrong. It's the first time I got exposed to searching online a bit more specifically. And the way this went is after my first or second year, I had to write essays in English and in Dutch and then in Chinese. And what I did is, what I used to do was Googling. What I do now is OSINTing or OSIMFing, right? And I just dumped words or sentences haphazardly from Google Translate into a Chrome browser or Baidu. And then I'd end up with, I don't know, 6 million results, 7 million results. And I thought, hey, I'm getting the impression, I'm getting good grades, it's working, but I'm getting the impression that there's got to be better stuff than 7 million results out of there, right? So I thought, hey, maybe it's just because I'm an older dude at university. Let me just ask those fast students around me. I asked them, and they said, I asked them, how do you search? And they said, well, you just put things in the Google bar, and whatever pops up, you use, boomer. They didn't say boomer, but I could hear them think it's all good. And I'd ask them, well, okay, I do that, but I Google, but I end up with 5 million results. How about you? 4, 5, 6 million results. Okay, so that's not good, I thought. And I noticed that whenever I used a PDF document, I would get better grades because the material was generally a bit better, academic, et cetera. So I started adding PDF at the back, not knowing it was a section of an advanced operator, which really made everything so much easier, right? And then I figured out, hey, wait, there's these things called advanced operators, right? If I would have known these, it would have really saved me so much time at studying. I think many people don't learn how to search online, I'm going to call it, because we assume that if we've grown up with the internet, that we know how to Google. And yeah, I can Google a wicked meatball recipe. I was going to say recipe. It's different when you search in other stuff in foreign languages online, like political stuff in different languages. And that's kind of where I thought, hey, this might be interesting to develop a bit more. There might be something interesting here. I found that sweet spot, my passion for languages, and then combined that with researching online. And I've been doing that for iIntelligence for about 3 years, teaching primarily people that don't speak Chinese how to find stuff online in Chinese, and for Arabic as well, same course, and Russian as well. But that's not me. I don't have the gigabytes in my brain left for Russian. My awesome colleague at Tennis runs a course on Russian OSINT, teaching people who don't speak Russian how to find stuff online in Russian. Yeah, that's me in a nutshell.
Fantastic. Yeah. And I really appreciate how you kind of pointed out how even the people with the fast brains, the young ones, they don't necessarily know that there is more to even just Google than just typing in a search query.
It's true. Luckily, what I see in different countries, what I also hear from friends, is it's starting to become a thing. You know, IT classes at school is not just how to turn on a computer, how to use PowerPoint and Word. It's also, hey, check out these cool things which are going to make your searches so much easier in a fun way, you know, on social media or for cool videos, but also for your research. So there's hope. Well, it's not hope. There you go.
Absolutely.
I just had a quick question. You might want to add how many languages that you do speak and the importance of understanding them.
And the culture.
With the culture and so forth, because I think that's important.
So I'm lucky because that section of the brain seems to work. I think I got dropped by my mom on my head a few times. So that part of the brain got a boost. Don't worry, there's plenty of parts that don't work so well. The numbers part is an absolute nightmare. But languages seem to stick. And so to answer your question, I speak about 9. I'm fluent in 4 or 5. I'm decent, or how do I say, I can talk myself and out of myself of trouble in a couple of languages. And often that's kind of in many cases, that's just enough to kind of break the ice. I was really happy to use it a lot in my professional work, using French in the military with other countries. The French, of course, learned a bit of Spanish on my own, and that was really useful in, you know, Central America, South America. Arabic was really great. I learned that for 3 years on my own before, you know, everything happened with Iraq. So I was able to really use it a lot there. And then, and then Chinese. So yeah.
We may have been in that Middle East area around the same time then, if you're talking about pretty much before the stuff kind of all went down in Iraq and before the 9/11.
Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. So yeah, you have a background in Arabic as well, right, Kirby?
And in the military.
And military, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah. Hey, so main purpose of this podcast is we're just trying to get a feel for what others investigators operating environment is. So what is the hardware that you're using? What kind of computers, what kind of, you know, gadgets, bits and bobs?
Sure. So my work primarily focuses on teaching and a bit less on researching. I do some as a teacher, you have to research as well, just to keep abreast of all the, it never stops, right? It's like drinking from a fire hose, and then you have to pick out the best ones out there. In terms of hardware, I think one of your previous guests helped me out, said they had a preference for a gaming computer because they're stronger and faster. Was it Julie, right? I think
Amber. It's Amber Schroeder.
Oh, okay, was Ember. So yeah, I've got an MSI gaming computer, not for gaming. So gamers would be vexed because I don't use it for game. I just use it because it's fast and reliable. I do quite a lot of teaching. So I have a Sony ZV-10 camera, have a Yeti mic to sound better than my normal voices. No, this is my normal voice, obviously. So I'm used to having several screens. I liked having a one screen for writing a report. And one screen for researching and one screen for anything else. So I'm kind of a bit spoiled in terms of screens. And I also have the same setup when I travel. I do quite some traveling with teaching. So I actually have a system which is called the Trio Mobile Pixels. Really cool company where you just click a device behind your laptop screen and then you can pull out a right side and a left side screen. So instead of having one screen on your laptop, you end up having three screens. And it makes you look really slick at airports and Starbucks. You claim all this real estate, but it's I'm actually training myself to pivot back to one screen. But as an investigator, if you have a static spot, I'm like I do lots of dynamic stuff. Having several screens is just going to make your life so much easier to think about all the people doing geo-inting, comparing images, but even with regular stuff, right? One screen for report writing, maybe one screen for your AI interface if you're doing dark web, one screen for that. So that's what I have in terms of hardware for teaching. I've also, well, some of the things I learned at the military was one is none and always carry spares. So I've had massive amount of, not a massive amount, but it's quite some courses that I attended where the instructor shows up and then they have a half a meter long HDMI and then they have to ask the organizers for a longer HDMI. So I thought that's not going to happen with me. Skippy's going to travel with everything double, longer, faster, just in case, right? It's probably not going to happen, but every time there's just a little glitch out there. I even travel with a second laptop. Just in case when I have to present that might, I think you and I were talking about that, Cynthia. Computers sometimes have a decide, hey, Skip, I see you're teaching now, but I'm just going to go and run a whole reset. So you're
Yes.
just going to have to wait. It does that. Like I said, I'm pretty sure if I OSINT it or Google it, there's probably something I can do to prevent having that happen during my courses. But I like having my spares just in case I had everything. So there. In terms of hardware.
I have a question for you. Have you ever considered using an iPad as an extra monitor for when you're traveling? I am just starting to do that to your iPad.
Gotcha. Yeah, I do that with a larger smartphone sometimes when I travel. So when I teach, I usually teach virtually. I 100% sure want to be sure what I'm sharing on in Google Teams or in Zoom, right? So I have a separate device where I log myself in with my alter ego. I always agree with him. I can see what I'm sharing. So he joins the courses as well every time, just to be sure what's happening on the side. And I thought about having an iPad on the side or like a tablet, but I prefer having a smaller laptop just in case my main laptop just, at the moment supreme, just shuts down. That I can give the people a break, and then just flip to another laptop. In terms of hardware, I have something as well here as a teacher, which I don't know other people have, but sometimes where I live there's tropical thunderstorms, and show must go on, right? The power shuts down sometimes, so I bought myself a big generator with enough gas just in case that happens. It happened twice before. Where I had to give the group a pause, run outside, crank up that generator, and then have it going again. Show must go on, right?
Absolutely, that's very wise. I actually just got a battery system too. That hasn't happened to me yet, but that is a you know like you have to power your internet besides your computers and yeah.
Yes, I've thought about that too. I'm glad you asked
Internet.
that, Kirby. So
Yeah.
what I do is I have a hotspot, which is topped up, well topped up, and I know how much gig I need for a 3.5 hour course, which is usually the length of a full course or a section of a course, and I know how much gig I need for that, so I can continue with that. At some point, somebody's going to have to tell me enough is enough tools, Skip. But you know how it goes, right? You can never have enough screens and tools.
No, but then you're going to need a Sherpa to help carry all of those.
Yes, I'm trying to downscale everything so I can have everything in one backpack when I travel and not have you have to deal with less luggage, right? So don't put anything critical in your checked-in luggage as an instructor. You don't want to be stuck with that, right? You want to have that extra shirt in your backpack and that computer so that you're ready to go whenever you hit somewhere, right?
Absolutely. All right, so we talked about hardware. Let's talk about some software. What is your working environment, whether it's for teaching or for investigations?
So I really focus on investigations, and I try to have the most common setup as most of the participants have that join our courses, which is predominantly going to be Chrome. As a caveat, the things I teach on Chrome, Google Chrome, I always tell people, in general, you can do the same thing on Firefox, other ones out there, right? You just can't cover all of them, so you're going to have to be picky. And like somebody else said in this podcast, some people are going to cringe and say, why Chrome and everything? Well, just because it's readily available and user friendly. So that's in terms of software, several VPNs I like to use, and as well a virtual machine as well in some cases. But for teaching, I usually just stick to a very simple setup, and I try and, well, I don't try. I actually teach people to do as much as they can without having subscriptions to paid for platforms, because we can find a ton, right? The most important tool we have or application we have is just downloadable. It's our brain taking our time, reading, attention to detail. All the tools in the world aren't going to beat the investigative mindset and attention to detail, right?
I agree. Okay, so I want to ask you, can you be specific about which your favorite VPNs or virtual machines?
Yeah, sure. So VPN, I've been using ExpressVPN for quite some time. NordVPN does a pretty good job as well. Proton VPN is pretty good too. In terms of virtual machine, I did use Oracle VM VirtualBox for some time, but for teaching, that kind of gets a bit difficult. So I try to, like I said, I try to stick to a rather mainstream setup, if you will.
Cynthia, do you have any questions about that?
You know, when you're, what about on your phone? If you're going somewhere and you don't have your computers up and you're going on your phone, what's going to be your go-to for doing some searching? It's not as easy as having that computer there for you.
It's true, and I don't do any searching on my smartphone. A,
No.
because it's just too small. I could get a huge smartphone, but I just don't want to do it. I just use my smartphone for my personal stuff and
Okay.
finding out where I can get a grab a bite to eat. I do all my research and on computers, or research or teaching on a computer.
Now, I know we were chatting earlier before we got started, and we were talking about, yes, technology is absolutely awesome, but you and I are both old school when it comes to using paper and writing things down. And we
Yes.
both were holding up. Why is it? Talk about that, because some people look at us and like, why are they writing this down? It should be going on an Excel or a Word or something, or notes.
For me, I've always been a pen and paper dude, just in case batteries run out, but that's not the prime reason. I think the prime reason is when I get that pen and paper and I get that pen in my hand, I start writing things. For me personally, it sinks in what I'm writing down and how what I'm going to prioritize for every day and what I do. I like mind maps. I like checklists. My whole life is a checklist. If I lose that pen and paper, I'm toast, but I'm not going to lose it, right? I take a picture of it once in a while. Going back to old school is something I talked about last week, which is interesting. I get quite a number of like OSINTers that have a solid background as a librarian. I'm talking 10 plus years, right? And I've always been amazed that in my courses, whether it's the Chinese course or the Arabic course, which I teach to people that don't speak Arabic or don't speak Chinese, and I get librarians in there that have been around for some time. It's great to see them being able, just due to mindset, find information faster than people that have, that are second language, that have Chinese as a second language, or younger, or Arabic as a as a second language, just because they have that mindset of compartmentalizing information and getting to the root cause. So I think, yeah, we talked about this, but you have a definite advantage, I think, if you start off doing the groundwork, understanding how to make links, whether you're an investigator or a librarian, right? It's all about compartmentalizing and then venturing into dark web, AI, and all that good stuff. Other way around, you'd be tempted if you've been exposed to AI dark web first, and then you'd have to go do the groundwork. You'd think, yeah, but this is just taking too long. I should have had this report done last week, right? It's at the end of the day, it's a good combination. You need a good combination of both of those skills. And I had an equation last week, and then right after that equation, our good friend Micah Hoffman came up with a better equation, said his equation would be AI plus OSINT, and number two would be dark web plus OSINT. So those basic skills, right? Great, great guy.
Yeah, Micah is somebody we just interviewed as well, so he's in an upcoming episode.
Oh, you did? Okay. He's going to be before me or after me?
Before you. This is his buddy
Okay.
guy. So,
So I'm going to see if he did a shout out on me, right?
right. And hey, anybody who's listening can go back and listen to Micah, or they already have, hopefully.
Definitely, definitely.
I
And
want to
just
see
like
you.
Micah and you, sorry, Kirby. I mean, just like Micah, I mean, I speak very high of him. I speak very highly of other OSINTers that have been around for five, six, seven times longer than me. And you're definitely one of them. It's great to have this community of people that share information. And that's always what I tell people. I mean, I'm pretty sure I wanted to ask you actually, Kirby and Cynthia and Sarah. You must get quite a lot of messages from people saying, "Hey Kirby, how do I do it? How do I get into OSINT? How do I learn everything? How do I become knowledgeable at everything on OSINT?" I'd be curious what your answer usually is with that, right?
Well, that kind of goes into what I was going to actually talk to you about just a minute ago, which is everybody comes at it from a different angle. So everybody's, when you said you don't have a typical way into OSINT, honestly, I don't think there is a typical way into OSINT. Some people come through InfoSec, some people come through librarians, some people come through private investigations, and you came through the military and languages, basically. And so that when you work with other people, you get to see those other ideas in action. And that's really one of the best things out there is that you get this community of people and you all work together and you work complementary so that you want to work with each other. And then there's like just a big like brain merge of things. And you can ask those questions, those equations, for example, like with Micah, where I'll say something and Cynthia, I'll say, well, here's my point of view on it. And oh, it didn't even occur to me, right?
100%. I think I got two of those questions today, actually, in DM saying, "Hey, how do I get there?" I always pivot back to learn the basics and just don't be shy. I mean, we can reach out to anyone on, Twitter or on LinkedIn. A nice person is going to give you a nice answer. A nice OSINT professional is going to tell you, "Hey, let me help you out. Let me give you a couple of tips," right? There's plenty of others out there, or I guess some, I don't know them, that don't want to do that, right? Sharing is caring and pointing people in the right direction. So mastering the basics, and I mean, you and I are both instructors and professionals in this, but there's actually a ton you can get lift off of the internet that's just freely available. Cool tools on YouTube, tutorials, etc. Finding out what your sweet spot would be the most important, I think, right? Mastering the basics, then thinking, all right, what am I passionate about? It's pretty. You can be an all-rounder or jack of all trades. But at some point, you're going to have to find that sweet spot because there's so many jacks of all trades. So find that sweet spot. And for me, it's never worked for me. I cannot learn something I do not want to learn, right? I've been in a couple of trainings in the military where it just didn't get into my brain because I was a mule. I couldn't get in. It just couldn't enter, right? Kudos if you can, right? But find that sweet spot. If you're passionate about human exploitation, child protection, if you're passionate about politics, about a country, about a language, energy, whatever there is something to do in OSINT with that. So combining that passion for whatever it is you stand for, together with OSINT skills, and you're bound to find something that's gonna fit right. And there's so many cool educators out there that really focus on niche things. If you want to do GEOINT, I mean, you can go to Ben Brown. He does awesome stuff, right? And all the other ones out
Has a great
there.
YouTube channel.
Definitely, no, definitely. Shout out to him.
I agree, and I think that You're absolutely right. When if you somebody's asking me how to get into OSINT, the first thing I'm going to say is get out on Twitter, not necessarily Twitter now, but like as many whatever social media tool you can find your OSINT community, and put yourself out there. And even if it's just asking questions, because maybe you don't think of yourself as an expert yet, asking the questions can be just as valuable as giving the links, because now you're putting in a section where everybody can come together with their ideas rather than just putting out one idea, right?
I like that. Another tip I give to people that reach out to me primarily on LinkedIn is saying, hey, just find groups within LinkedIn that are really specialized on a niche subject, and then get into those groups and just introduce yourself and just talk to people, right? It's a great way to get really specific content, whether as just being on LinkedIn and just waiting what's being fed to you, which is, I heard, it depends on what you click. But if you get into these groups, you're going to get specific stuff that's really going to be niche to towards what you're interested in.
Right. And also kind of keep a skeptical mind as well, though, because there are some people who maybe don't have the best intentions and might, send you the wrong way or whatever. But just again, just use your critical thinking and ask those questions and get, the more people you talk to, the better you're going to figure out which ones are going to be helpful and which ones are not going to be helpful.
I
No,
think you have to,
definitely, definitely.
yeah, and you really have to. You guys have hit it on the nose of talking, but folks do not ask enough questions. They're sitting in the background and they're waiting for someone to give them an answer. They already know the question. They're just waiting for that answer without asking it. And to be able to emphasize on there is no dumb question. If anything
Correct.
you ask, I had to look up a word the other day and I'm like, I have no idea what this is. I had to go look it up to understand what I was listening to. So
Did you
I'm all
look
I
it
thought
up
they
in a
didn't
paper
talk about my
dictionary,
doppelganger.
Cynthia?
I'm sorry, what? Go ahead,
I
Skip.
said, did you look it up in a paper dictionary, or did you Google it?
No, I went to my phone and I said, what is,
There we go.
what the word was? Was it
All
doppelganger?
good.
Yes, it was.
That's
I'm doing a class on AI doppelgangers. Yes, I'm like, what
awesome.
in the heck is that? And then once I looked it up, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I didn't know that.
So the first question I get is, hey, the question I often get is, hey, how do I get into OSINT and start? The other question I often get is, what's the best tool for OSINT out there?
Oh
Do you
gosh.
guys get that too? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, always. What's your
What's
answer?
typically your answer? My answer is, well, the answer of the people I surround myself. So I have a habit of surrounding myself with people that are what much smarter than I am. And actually, the answer that my colleague Chris Pallaris says when he's asked this question is the best OSINT tool out there. You're gonna like this, is a library card. They're cheap. They're usually a buck for a year, and with the right library card, you can topple a government. So yeah, that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I
Cynthia, how
like
often
that.
do you
And
say that?
I like that you say the right one because some libraries have access to all sorts of cool databases. I mean,
Yes.
you can do your OSINT research at their computer. So even if you don't have a computer, you have that library card that's free. You can use their
I love
computer.
it.
You can protect yourself some OPSEC things with a computer that you don't own as you're doing that. But
Yes.
then also if you have access to all those, that is a fantastic advice because again, some of those databases. I used to actually always go to the university, even just as an investigator, especially when I was at DOD, just go to the university libraries so I could get access to certain databases.
Definitely. It's funny. Well, it's not funny. Actually, I'm going to pivot back to my years as a slow Googler at university. There was actually a morning where it's usually an old lady, and it's usually a very friendly old lady in every library, where they just took us by the hand and showed us the library, saying, hey, this is the standalone computer of this physical library. It is not linked to the internet, but it will tell you where every book is on every plank exactly. It took about 2 or 3 hours to understand that system. And we're talking about 2014, not so long ago, right? But nobody actually told us that we live in a library. We can access information from different planks in different sections of the World Wide Web, right? Yeah, that kind of tied that into what I said about searching online and me ending up with 6 million results. Well, I actually wanted to end up with three journals, physical ones, or two books, right? Ideally online, but there you go.
Let's continue with some software. So next question I'm going to ask is, so as far as like collecting information, is there a tool that helps you collect and organize? Or are you an Excel user, not using any fancy tools? Or do you write it on paper?
I write a bit on paper. I'm gonna give a tool. It's been around for some time. I'm a big fan of MS Notepad. It's not a heavy tool. It's not gonna take too much space on your computer, but it's great. I love it, and I use it for all my courses, especially with foreign languages and foreign alphabets. Just because when you find information, you can stack it up and see if everything looks the same when you find another selector, maybe another name, another location, another document, another title. And then you can kind of confirm that if you copy paste from several sources, like one is none, you always need several sources. If you put that into Word or other documents, it's going to be shifted and warped. And after a long day, you're looking at a foreign language. I really focus on that. Everything is nice and straight. And right off the bat, you can see if you're or five or six results are all in check with each other, and then to find us. So MS Notepad, it's what I use a lot for identifying keywords. I'm a big fan of keywords. I think they're a great starting point for open source information and open source intelligence, right? Finding the right keyword is going to help you. I mean, if you're somebody that really focuses are heavily on paid for subscriptions, which are really great, by the way, if you're able to spend that time, find those keywords, finding that person, that name, that document, that place, and then input that into a paid for subscription. That's just gonna multiply. That's just gonna be a strong false multiply. And going back to groundwork investigation work. So MS Notepad is one I use a lot on my screen when sharing information on during my course to say, hey, let's just do this research together. I love researching stuff together. I don't like one-way communication. I don't like death by PowerPoints. So I like lots of exercises, and every time people in my courses send me answers for the questions I have, which is cool because they answer them really quickly, and it's always validating to see that people can find stuff in foreign languages really fast. So it means it's working. I put those in a notepad. I share that. I can say, hey, look, we all have kind of the same results, and then you can validate that. And for the rest, in terms of software, not too much fancy stuff, right? I think I covered most of them. I really stick to the basics. If you master the basics, whatever you learn, whether you're in corporate intelligence research, law enforcement, or academic research, journalistic research, whatever tool you're going to use after that, pay for a subscription. That's what you the knowledge you get from searching in a foreign language with the basic skills, like I said, keywords, that's just going to multiply that.
Sarah.
Do you use any Chinese-based tools?
So tools not so much. Yes, actually, I do. I do. For Chinese, there's one I've been using before going into OSINT. I think most students of Chinese download it. Even some Chinese speakers download it. It's called Pleco. It's a free application. It works offline. When you download it on your smartphone, it gives you the ability to write in characters on a screen. It's got a built-in dictionary as well. It's got an OCR tool. It does a great job, right? I mean, how often? I still teach going back. I'd like to continue a bit on this. I also teach OCR tools during my courses. So many times people say, why are you bothering with OCR? Does Google Lens, right? Google Lens does a great job. And there's a person who always tags along on investigations. It's Mr. Murphy. And usually Mr. Murphy on the Moment Supreme on Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning is going to tell you, hey, I noticed you have to have this report ready by in 1 hour. I'm just going to sabotage your Google Lens. It's not going to work because the angle is not so good, right? So you're going to have to pivot to those other tools out there to extract that information, online OCR. And Pleco, for Chinese, I use Pleco because you can actually write down by hand what characters you see. You don't have to be a Bob Ross to it helps, but you get those characters out and then doing the groundwork. It takes a bit of time writing something by hand, but you got to be patient. That would be the other tool I would download. Patience, right? It's a freely available tool in our built-in app stores. But usually I get that too, right? I'm impatient too. I want to have those results 5 minutes ago, not in 5 minutes, right? But being patient working with a foreign language helps a lot. Other tools out there which I still use a lot are even if people say it's not that strong, I still think it's a good tool. Google Translate, right? At the minimum, it's going to tell you you're talking about oranges or apples in a foreign language, right? Getting the gist of it. What I also see is there's an over-reliance on these tools in not only researchers, but also people that have to present to media, right? So people literally copy-pasting whatever results they get from Google Translate, right? And putting that online. It could be political text, and that has influence, right? I mean, journalists have a task to report and translate accurately. There's great alternatives to Google Translate, right? I'm a big fan of the, you guys know DeepL, right? DeepL and I are good friends. Still try. I send them emails to tell them, hey, you need to add Arabic, Farsi, Pashto, and Dari to your interface. But it does really good job at other languages and getting alternatives. It's going to pick up on proverbs, idioms, and that's kind of what I focus on, right? With any platform, even DeepL, whenever a translation sounds weird or is off, that's probably because it is, right? And Google Translate isn't that good at telling you if a translation is off or if it sounds weird. It's great at detecting the language. It's great at giving you a quick gist of something, but there you go.
Okay, I have a question for you as far as notes and OCR and even probably Translate as well. Have you used Microsoft OneNote?
I have not. No, I have not.
So that is one that, and I think a lot of people kind of skip over it, but it's such a nice tool. If you're familiar with Evernote, it's kind of like Evernote, but like all on one bulletin board sort of thing. You can kind of move around, grab files, throw them in there, have it automatically translate, handwrite things if you want to. It'll read it, figure it out, OCR it, bring in documents to OCR, images. It's very nice. Very, very nice
tool. Excellent. I'll give a good look later. Excellent.
Okay. Well, I think we are at the point where we are going to do our last call. So last call is a section where we give one tool that we're very excited about lately. It's been very helpful for us, that sort of thing. And so I'm going to go around and ask everybody what their last call is, and I'll finish it up. So Skip, what's your tool of the moment that you're really enjoying using?
Oh, I have to go to my friend Ari Benam's tool. He's been working on it for a few months. It's his baby, and it's out now in beta form. It's called Telemetry App. That's TelemetryApp.io. If you have show notes, it'd be great if you put that there. He's been working on this for a long time. He's actually been using it recently with everything happening in the middle. It's a software that gives clients progress search capabilities and analytics for Telegram. And it enables researchers to rummage through messages, records, and contacts all over Telegram channels and messages. Telegram is typically quite difficult to research with operators, etc. This helps a lot with that. So I definitely give a shout out to or promote that tool. It's a great tool. It's going to help. If you're a Telegram user, go ahead and have a look at that. He's been using it to show Telegram groups of which are involved in what we're seeing this week, right? I think this week is a pretty dark week in terms of what's happening in the Middle East. So he's out there using his tool to that advantage. Great tool.
Okay, Cynthia.
Well, I'm not going to go with any new tools. I am going to say that I have been going more and more onto Discord for getting information. And you can get, you know, tools and everything else off of there. Bellingcat has been great, only because I've been looking for some specific things and they have been able to provide that information for me. And then this morning I was pivoting over to X, and I got some great stuff to send over to my grandson about the war. He's in the army. And so I was looking for stuff, anything I can pull up to give him so he understands what's going on before he gets deployed. So that's what I've been going on.
Yeah, something again top of mind at the moment.
Yes.
What's your tool of the moment, Sarah?
My tool of the moment, recently I've been enjoying backlink checkers, because backlink checkers provide a lot of times investigative leads to a link, and you can use it specifically for, like, for example, somebody's profile page on some social media platform. So you can see what the bat links are to that social media URL, which shows who might be communicating with that entity or individual in some instances.
Which specific backlink checkers are you using?
Ooh, I play with different ones, but one of my favorite ones is Ahrefs, which is AHREFS.com. That one's very helpful. And because it kind of prioritizes the top 100 backlinks for free to a URL. So.
All right. Thank you. All
right. I've got one more, but I wrote that I knew this was going to happen with links and shout outs. I've got one more, which I had prepared. Okay, I really want to share it. It's not, and by the way, it's not the link to my course, which people should take because if they want to find information in Chinese or Russian or Arabic, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. It's actually Ground News. So I'm not a sponsor of them or whatever, but Ground.News. Awesome news. Getting that unbiased reports or seeing what the other side says is just so important in this day and age where we're really being canalized into choosing sides with so many things in the world, right? It's if you just give it a chance as a reader, it's just going to show you the other perspectives of other places. I think you use it too there, Kirby. It's a great one just to really kind of challenge yourself, challenge your biases. Most people still stick to one or two or three news sources, right? That's something I really endorse when looking at not so much for, well, also for national things, even in my home country, but more so with international things, right? Relationships between geopowers, the US and China, in the Middle East these days. I mean, Ground News is a great place to go and check information about what's happening right there, right now, right?
I will say that is one of only two news sites that I actually pay for.
No
kidding.
Because
I really like their blind spot section.
I love
anyway,
it.
My link for today's last call, or not necessarily link, but my tool, CipherTrace. I have a demo of CipherTrace right now, and I am running my regular crypto investigations through there. I'm having a lot of fun kind of exploring what it's going to do for me. It doesn't do everything, but I don't think there is something that does everything. So I'm going to combine my CipherTrace information, of course, with my Multigo. So, all right. And
excellent.
So that's going to wrap us up. Skip, where can people find you? Give us the address to your courses. Give us your
awesome.
Twitter X handle, things like that.
So I'm quite Ocintable. So the most of the courses I teach, you can find those at iIntelligence. By the way, we don't only do Arabic, Chinese, and Russian. My colleagues run awesome courses on how to research the dark web, advanced social media, strategic foresight, a really cool course, improving requirements and planning. And I can't endorse enough my colleague Vitenis for his very timely course on Russian open source. And that would be at www.i-intelligence.com. That's where you're going to find us. Is it .com or .eu? It's EU. We're Ocintable. I'm Ocintable on Twitter. I'm Ocintable on LinkedIn. People can find me there. Great. If people want questions about our courses. What's that? Excellent. Yeah, thanks.
Our show notes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cheers,
anything
Kirby.
Anything else you want to talk about before we break?
No, just my thanks for what you're doing. It helps a lot, right? Even like I said this at the beginning, even if I've been around for not nearly as long as you, but I mean, it doesn't matter how specialized you are. Going back to the basics and hearing how other people search for stuff online, it's just so much rewarding. So you guys are doing a great job. So I'd like to give this shout out to you guys for what you do. Keep it up.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. And I think Cynthia and I should mention that we are just about to head to the Osmosis conference. That this will come out after the conference. So hopefully we'll have some information. Hopefully you're looking at our social media or wherever we're publishing things to see what we learned at that conference, if you're not going to be there and hang out with the person.
Or go to osintinstitute.org for the association that's starting.
That's right.
So yes, definitely want to go there. And that would be a place, Skip, to try and do some communicating with other people and different levels of folks in there. So
it's good fun. Yeah. Conferences are a good place to go to, learning from others.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
And bye.
Bye.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And don't forget to rate us on your favorite podcast app.
Also, please share so that we can continue sharing this podcast with you.